Tomorrow is UN World Refugee Day, a day set aside by the United Nations for people all over the world to focus on people who have to pick up and leave their homes, almost never to return. They get recognized tomorrow, but the situation exists every day of the year, and refugees have been in the news frequently in the 6 years since the civil war began in Syria. Eugene will mark the day tomorrow with a gathering at the Unitarian Universalist Church, 5 to 8 p.m. Our first guests will be there. Abby Gershenson is with the Refugee Resettlement Coalition of Lane County, which is one of the sponsors of the event. Abby, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, and good morning, Jeffrey.
Good morning. And Dr. Kristen Yaris is with us as well. She's an assistant professor of international studies and the co-director of the Center for Global Health at the University of Oregon. She'll be the keynote speaker. Dr. Yaris, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
So you study migrations in many places, Dr. Harris. How common is it that people have to pick up and move?
So it's very common. In fact, we're currently seeing record high levels of human displacement. There's more than 65 million people, according to the United Nations Human Rights Commission, that are displaced from their homes. So it's something that we've never seen before in human history. We're aware of some of the hot spots in Syria, Afghanistan, Sudan, and Somalia, but there's also massive displacement from Central America, from South Asia, any place where there's war, violence, political or economic, and climate insecurity. People will move in search of a better life.
All right, so 65 million people, that's a staggering number.
Yeah, it sure is, and that includes migrants, refugees, internally displaced people, and the UN is starting to recognize climate refugees as a distinct category of people, also people displaced by natural and man-made disasters and asylum seekers. All of those different categories fall within that 65 million number.
All right, I want to be clear on terminology here, because how careful should we be in applying terms like migrant and refugee, and how do they differ?
Well, according to international law and the sort of commonly accepted legal definitions, a refugee is someone who has fled their country of origin because of fear of persecution, whether that's religious, racial, ethnic, any other kind of discrimination or persecution that makes them fear for their life. So the UN says that's what categorizes a refugee, someone who fears for their safety and cannot return home because of a fear of persecution. On the other hand, the UN and international law defines a migrant generally as someone who's seeking a better life due to economic insecurity and is seeking economic opportunities elsewhere. That said, I would say that contemporary human displacement is beginning to blur those clear distinctions and categories in ever more blurry kind of a way. So sometimes it's really hard to distinguish the reasons for forced displacement, which may be a failed state, political insecurity, which leads to economic insecurity. You have gang violence in places like Central America, where I do my research, that's also due to economic insecurity and political insecurity. So in fact, the UN is beginning to use this new category of mixed migration, beginning to recognize the fact that it's sort of hard to tease out the reasons why people leave, which are often a combination of the political, economic, climate insecurity, et cetera.
Sure, a whole number of circumstances mixed in together. Okay. Abby Gershenson. Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to add, because you're looking for clear categories, if you want to just look at the, and Kristen, correct me if I'm wrong, if you want to just look at the refugees that are registered with the UN High Commissioner for Refugees, so in 2016 that was 20 million. So those are the officially registered refugees. Now we know there are more refugees who have not been able to register, but that number, 20 million, out of the number that Professor Yaris gave you, that is higher than immediately following the Second World War.
Wow.
The first year that it topped the immediately following the Second World War.
We are talking about refugees and UN World Refugee Day tomorrow, observed in Eugene. Abby Gershenson, you just heard, is with the Refugee Resettlement Coalition of Lane County. Dr. Kristen Yaris is an assistant professor of international studies and co-director of the Center for Global Health at the University of Oregon. She'll be the keynote speaker tomorrow evening at an observance at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Eugene. 800-838-3760. If you have questions or comments or observations about migrations and refugee situations, send emails to jx@jeffnet.com. Internet.org. So, Abby, we had you on last year to talk about the Syrians. What's the update on bringing Syrians to Lane County?
Oh, yes, and it was a pleasure to talk to you then. So we started out well. We have resettled 5 individual refugees, and the last one came in December. And then we had our new president who issued 2 executive orders. Some people called them a Muslim ban. Some people called them, they were called different names. But basically, even though the courts have actually, since then, the one in January and the one in March, the courts have said that these are not constitutional and have not upheld these. They have thrown the actual program into turmoil, and since then we have received 0 refugees. The program is we get refugees through a volunteer agency in Washington, D.C., and the numbers are down. It's about 10% of the refugees coming in now than the amount that were coming in before these executive orders under the new administration.
Are they not applying, or are the agencies that are helping them not processing the paperwork, just kind of holding it because of the court situation?
So these are good questions. From what I understand, it's actually even starting with the vetting process overseas. As you know, all the vetting is done not on U.S. soil, but where the refugees are living, and apparently that's been slowed down greatly. And then the uncertainty, because of the uncertainty, all the programs, a lot of these employees of programs were full-time, things like that. We are not. We are a volunteer coalition. We are much smaller, but you have these larger programs in larger cities where people were actually being laid off. So I think it's basically there's been a confusion and an uncertainty that's caused it, and it starts from overseas. It starts with the actual U.S. vetting process where the refugees are living. There's less of them, and they're less clear on what to do.
Is the RRCLC, the Refugee Resettlement Coalition of Lane County, just about Syrians, or is it a broader effort, Abby?
No, it's a broader effort. In fact, we've had 1 of our 5 individuals is not from Syria. 4 of them are. So we, the memorandum of understanding that we signed with the Conference of Catholic Bishops, which is one of the volunteer agencies in Washington, D.C., one of the 9 that takes refugees and places them, they will refer to us any refugees that have U.S. ties in our area, and we will gladly take them.
Okay, so that's an important point to bring up. And we're not just talking about refugees where you're throwing darts at a map or something. I mean, if there's a tie, some connection that person has to Lane County, that's a reason to bring them to Lane County.
Exactly, and that's why we're doing this, because we're trying to, and the State Department is trying to reunite families, and we have had some very happy reunions here. We're just very sad that right now we're kind of in a holding pattern.
Abby, Lane County can certainly be a pretty tolerant place, but, you know, it's filled with people. So, I mean, have you gotten much resistance to your efforts to resettle Syrian refugees?
So far, we have not, thankfully. We know that there is potential pushback, and so we proceed cautiously as far as not publicizing names, addresses, things like that. But we also do that because we just want to protect the privacy and the dignity of the people who are arriving as new arrivals, as refugees.
Dr. Kristen Yaris, it occurred to me this morning when I was reading a news item about troops gathering at the border of Syria and Iraq in an effort to flush the Islamic State group out, that some of the people who may be fleeing Syria might have previously fled Iraq. Do you have much knowledge about that?
I don't. I'm not a regional specialist, but I did want to point out that the major source countries of refugees right now do include Syria, Afghanistan, Somalia, Sudan, South Sudan, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Myanmar or Burma, Iraq and Eritrea. So we still are talking about a worldwide phenomenon. And I also think it's important to point out that the major refugee hosting countries, that is where second countries where most refugees are sort of taking harbor in temporary, either encampment situations, which 50% of the world's refugees find themselves in camps, or sort of resettled as urban refugees. But those major refugee hosting countries actually are outside of Europe and the West and countries that we would consider higher income or
more developed countries. So those refugee hosting countries are Turkey, Pakistan, Lebanon, Iran, Ethiopia, Jordan, Kenya, Chad. You can see that they're countries that are proximate to those countries where the crises are occurring. And so people are fleeing over borders in search of security and often find themselves in a sort of legal, political, and social limbo of the kind that Abby's referring to while they wait to be resettled or processed, while their refugee or asylum petitions are being processed through the UNHCR or through third country state departments or refugee resettlement processes. So we can talk about people being in situations of displacement for years and years, awaiting some determination on their case. And this is incredibly traumatic for people, but not just the original reason for displacement, but also that uncertainty while they wait to hear about what's going to happen to them and their family.
So they've gotten out of immediate danger, perhaps, but they're in another situation where they can't do much of anything and are in a strange land that they're not planning on staying in permanently.
That's correct. Right.
And Jeffrey, I can add to that. So about half of the refugees who enter the United States are children, are under the age of 18. And those are the a lot of what you have in these limbo situations. About a quarter are over 60. And just to follow up on your last question about possible pushback, the facts that we know are that the refugee policy into the United States is very extensive. There are 20 steps for every refugee, 2 extra steps for refugees coming from Syria. The average wait time is 2 years, and it was retooled after 9/11. And since those terrorist attacks in 2001, we've admitted 785,000 refugees, and none of those have been convicted on domestic terrorism charges.
So what you're saying is that the vetting is already quite rigorous.
Correct, Jeffrey.
Abby Gershenson is with the Refugee Resettlement Coalition of Lane County. Dr. Kristen Yarris is an assistant professor of international studies at the University of Oregon and the co-director of the Center for Global Health at the University of Oregon. We are talking about refugees. Tomorrow is UN World Refugee Day. There will be an observance tomorrow evening at the Unitarian Universalist Church, 5 to 8 in Eugene. Both of these people will be there. And if you're thinking about joining up or at least have some questions or comments about the refugee situation around the world, we welcome your input here on the Jefferson Exchange. 800-838-3760 to come in by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Dr. Yarris, I want to come back to your strong suit. You've studied a lot in Central America, and it seems like it's not always a whole family migration. You get parts of families moving on. What happens there?
So often you see parents migrating first without their children, and then seeking to have their children join them through family reunification processes later. But as it's become more and more difficult for people to file family reunification visa petitions inside the United States, that's what's led to the increasing number of children traveling as unaccompanied minors and trying to cross into the United States through Mexico from Central America to rejoin their parents. Parents' first choice is to have their children join them through legal means, but those windows, those opportunities have become increasingly restricted. And so that led to what made a lot of media attention in 2014, in the summer months of 2014, the sort of child refugee crisis from Central America, children seeking refuge in the United States to reunify with their parents.
So Mexico is often a pass-through, it sounds like, but the United States is more of a final destination.
That's correct. Mexico is what we consider a transit country. So Mexico, in many ways, feels the burden of sort of the failure of U.S. immigration policy, in the sense that many refugees, asylum seekers, and migrants find themselves in that, what you described earlier, that holding pattern, awaiting U.S. decisions on their asylum petitions or their immigration cases in cities and border towns like Tijuana or Nogales. So Mexico is sort of forced to deal with what many call the outsourcing of the refugee crisis or the immigration crisis in the United States.
Kristen, are refugees and asylum seekers treated differently? Are there different rules and benefits versus people who simply want to move?
Yes. So that resettlement process that Abby talked about relates to refugees who are to that certain category of person who have a fear of persecution and who file for refugee status and are categorized as refugees through the United Nations High Commissioner on Refugees. Migrants have a number of channels through which they can petition for legal residency in the United States or other destination countries. Asylum seekers, the technical definition is that they find themselves inside the borders of the country in which they seek harbor or refuge. So someone would be in the United States and then file asylum petition to remain essentially as an asylee or a refugee. And that's a sort of a separate legal process. But again, those categories become really blurred in practice. Most recently, we saw in the news the case of Haitians who had been displaced following the 2010 earthquake and then the cholera outbreak, who were granted temporary protected status, a certain category, inside the United States to be here legally. Many since 2010 have set up businesses and had children here, U.S. citizen children. And then the State Department and the Department of Homeland Security recently was considering revoking that TPS, or temporary protected status. And you have this outcry in the Haitian diaspora, like, we can't go home. We've created our lives here. So these legal categories have, as you said earlier, real social implications for families and community.
Abby Gershenson, these legal categories really exist since World War II, right? They were set up in a lot of cases by the UN to address the situations of refugees on a more general sort of preemptive kind of basis.
Actually, I'm going to refer that question to Kristen. Do you know if they were, I don't know if they were set up by the UN. I know that all the policies that we have in this country were set up by the United States. Kristen, can you add to that?
Sure. So the main overarching international law or convention that relates to refugees is the UN's 1951 Convention on the Status of Refugees. And it's precisely as you suggested, Jeffrey, that was 1951. It was the post-World War context. And it was the international community seeking to come together to establish some clear guidelines about how the international community had a responsibility to resettle refugees who were fleeing war and persecution. And that framework from 1951 and then the 1967 protocol, which extended that framework globally, most countries of the world are signatories, and that still remains as sort of the overarching international legal framework for the treatment of refugees and displaced people.
All right, let's take a call here. We have Val and Eugene on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Dr. Kristen Yaris and Abby Gershenson. We're talking about refugees.
Yes, thank you. I wanted to back up a little bit, and let's talk about the vetting process. We have a challenge today with the vetting process in that the records overseas have been destroyed. Many of the people that are claiming child status are indeed men, and many of the refugees that are coming over right now are between the ages of 15 and 45. Quite a few of them are not identified fully, and they have a terminology called FUNU, full name unknown, as they come in. The medical processing for vetting them once they get in through the UN process that's been set up through the religious communities have not been put in place to where even the transportation pieces have been able to be cleansed for any communicable diseases or anything like that. So we have to back up a little bit, slow down, and understand the fact that while we want to help people, we have a huge heart, and we want to make sure that people are taken care of. We have an issue where we have radical people utilizing a system in place that's meant to help others.
And but Val, are they getting through the existing vetting process, are you saying?
Yes. Yes, they are. And the problem with it, as they get through the vetting process, is the religious communities are making money per head, per refugee, to bring them in, and they're only demanded that they spend an X amount of dollars per refugee, and there's no tracking of them. They bring them in, they get paid, there are federal grants to pay them to bring them in and then turn them loose. So we don't have a tracking system.
Okay, let's track what you're alleging here with the knowledge that Abby Gershenson has from working on this.
Yes,
so thanks,
Val,
for that.
I'm happy to answer you, and in fact I can reassure you on a number of points. First of all, as I mentioned, half of the people coming in are children, and they actually are under the age of 18. And the vetting process that they have to go through, we're talking about 9 different federal agencies before they ever set foot on U.S. soil. They are the interviews that happen overseas in the refugee camps where they are so exhaustive as far as making them prove who they are, and they do have papers. Every single refugee that we've had come in has papers. They know exactly who they were. They've had to show that to all the different agencies that interviewed them, and they do have a medical check before they can come. They are required to pass a medical check. So even after they pass through those steps of vetting, and as I mentioned, those are 20 different steps. They take about 2 years. They have a medical check, and if they do not pass that, then once again, they are not allowed in. And the final thing that you were concerned about, which is about that these religious volunteer agencies are making money, the reason that we are in existence, the Refugee Resettlement Coalition of Lane County is in existence, we are an all-volunteer agency, is because the money provided, there is money provided through the State Department. It's a one-time payment, and it's given to each individual refugee for resettlement here in the U.S. once they go through that 20-step or 22-step vetting process. There is some money that also goes to the resettlement agency, which in our case is Catholic Community Services. It is not enough. So what we are doing is, it is a very small one-time payment. It is not even enough for the first 90 days. It's probably not even enough for a month. What we do, our volunteer coalition, is we also fundraise. And the fundraising is what helps to resettle those people. And lastly, I'd like to say that each refugee is flown into the United States on a loan. The plane ticket is a loan that the State Department gives them, and every one of our refugees and every single refugee in this country is required to pay back that plane fare in full. It's as part of the circumstances under which they come.
All right. Abby Gershenson is with the Refugee Resettlement Coalition of Lane County. Dr. Kristen Yaris, Assistant Professor of International Studies at the University of Oregon, both at tomorrow's observation of UN World Refugee Day, tomorrow at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Eugene, 5 to 8 p.m. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you, Jeffrey.